Support for this podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Turn shipping to your advantage with USPS Ground Advantage service. Learn how to gain a competitive edge at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
When they first told us that they were approving this mission and we were going to fly and impact this asteroid, you know, I almost did a double take. I was kind of like, there's no way they're going to let us do this. This sounds too fun.
That's Christina Thomas, assistant professor of astronomy and planetary science at Northern Arizona University. She leads the observations working group for the DART mission. They're studying how the asteroid's movements will change after impact. NASA sent a spacecraft to slam into an asteroid millions of miles away at a breezy speed of 14,000 miles per hour. The goal was to see if humans could do this and whether it could successfully change the orbit of this smaller asteroid or moonlet as it rotated around the larger asteroid.
We did this. Like, this worked.
In a world where giant asteroids change the fate of Earth. All right, that's enough of that. But Christina knows all about these deep impacts. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
So what happened to the dinosaurs is about 65 million years ago, a very large object, came in and impacted the planet. And the crater is actually around the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico.
So if an object that size were to come towards Earth now, is NASA's DART technology enough to divert it?
Well, no.
It's okay. Don't panic.
There's a huge caveat there that we know that's not going to happen. So, you know, one of the great things about the current planetary defense strategy is that we understand that there's more than one component. And one of the largest components is discovery. So we have to understand where all the objects are, what their orbits are. And we know that those dinosaur killer sized asteroids, we know where they are and we know their trajectories do not come close to the planet.
Well, that's a relief. Today on the show, we Earthlings hit an asteroid and actually change its orbit. What's it like watching the success of the DART mission and what impacts, you're welcome, this has had on science? I'm Regina Barber, and you're listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how a new study aims to impact an underrepresented community.
My greatest hope for the Voices of Black Women study is that it will help us understand and identify culturally tailored ways to change and really eliminate the unacceptable disparities for future generations of Black women as it relates to cancer.
To learn more, go to voices.cancer.org.
Okay, I need to pull up real quick my favorite video from the interwebs. It's the DART mission hitting the asteroid like the world's most awesome pool shot. I had to show it to Christina Thomas for a little nostalgia. And that ejecta that shoots off upon impact, that's my favorite detail. I love that poof. Do you see it?
I do,
like,
yeah.
Like, it was on everywhere. It was all over the place. People were sharing this image of actually seeing the collision. Tell us how it was from your point of view.
The impact event. You know, I'm standing there with a bunch of my colleagues at the Planetary Defense Coordination Office. And, you know, my phone starts, you know, just lighting up with these images. I could think of at least four different videos that I got from different observatories of that poof that happened right after. And every time I saw it, it was no less mind-blowing. Like, it was just really, truly fantastic to see. Because we knew that things were going to happen. Like, this wasn't unexpected, but it was still just like, whoa, we did it. and there's this kind of moment of pure awe.
Well, and it's not only a success, like, scientifically, but it's a success with, like, public engagement.
Mm-hmm. I think that this taps into a little bit of people's nostalgia for science fiction, something that's just a little bit out of the ordinary, that just seems a little bit out of the box, I guess. We started observing the Didymos system in 2015. And all of the observations up until the moment of impact were to better understand exactly what the orbital properties of the system were before we changed it.
This mission is almost like a sci-fi movie plot, like, but in real life. So can you like kind of back up for a second and can you give us an outline of what the DART mission was trying to do?
Right. So, you know, the DART mission, the double asteroid redirection test, is essentially our first test of a kinetic impact for planetary defense. And that's a very specific way of saying that we needed to think about how we would move an asteroid should the trajectory of that asteroid be coming close to Earth and be a threat to impact us. The best idea is a kinetic impact. And so that's essentially taking one spacecraft like DART and directly impacting it into another and using the momentum behind that impact to change the trajectory of the asteroid. And so we say it this way specifically because there's no additional explosion, there's no explosives on board the spacecraft. It's just the momentum of the spacecraft itself.
There's no bombs.
Exactly. It's just the spacecraft pushing it. And we knew that when we have the spacecraft impact, there was also going to be the ejecta, the material that comes off. And that's going to give it a little extra push too. And so one of the reasons to do this test is that it's actually more complicated than people might think.
Yeah, I mean, you teach physics, right? So you know that we always talk about like pool balls, right? Like
right.
One pool ball hits the other pool ball. But you're talking about if one of the pool balls like chunks of it fell off, right? And it wasn't such a nice collision, right?
Right. And then those chunks had momentum that, you know, pushed it forward. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so a lot of folks thought about this very carefully. And we realized that if it was just a simple billiard ball experiment, one object hitting another, then we'd have a period change that was probably going to be something like 7 minutes from the initial orbital period of Dimorphos. And that's not at all what we found.
So kind of for our listeners, can you describe the system, just kind of break down what the system looks like with the satellite, and then what was the orbit beforehand?
Right. So the two objects in the system are Didymos, which we call the primary because it's the larger one, and Dimorphos, which is the satellite or the moonlet of Didymos. And so those two objects are going around the sun together. And at the same time, Dimorphos is orbiting Didymos. And the initial orbital period that we calculated before the impact was about 11 hours and 55 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that's really what we were starting with. And we wanted to understand exactly how that was going to change. We impacted in a head-on collision. So, you know, we were coming towards the, you know, the front-facing side of Dimorphos. And by doing that, we knew that we were going to change the system in such a way that we were going to decrease the orbital period.
Right.
And so we were trying to figure out exactly how much we decreased it.
Dimorphos, the moonlet orbiting Didymos, now has an orbit that is 32 minutes shorter. But Christina, the sci-fi piece and why so many people are covering this so closely is the possibility of like future impacts and, you know, the fears associated with that. We know that several asteroid impacts happened in our history, the one that killed the dinosaurs, the one that created the moon. What can you tell us about that?
I mean, I think right now we're scared of the fact that we know that it's happened and that we don't know if it will happen again. And also, you know, 90s action movies. We're scared of those.
Yeah.
You know, people are fascinated by dinosaurs.
So what did happen to the dinosaurs? Help us out here.
Yeah. Right. So what happened to the dinosaurs is about 65 million years ago, a very large object, you know, came in and impacted the planet. And the crater is actually just around the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. And so we were able to discover through a variety of different things that put all these pieces together. But, you know, number one, there's a very interesting layer of material at the boundary between where the dinosaurs existed and when they no longer were present on the planet. And so we call that the KT boundary. It's enriched in things that we don't find on Earth, that we find on other bodies, on meteorites specifically, and asteroids. And so we can use that to start to connect that something had happened and something had been introduced from outer space. And then eventually, there was actually a survey for the oil company in Mexico, looking around the Gulf of Mexico, and they stumbled onto the impact crater itself. And we were able to really connect all of these pieces of the puzzle. And so it's really, really a great story, because it's something that that is actually, you know, somewhat modern and has really been developing over time, and more details come to light. So we have to understand where all the objects are, what their orbits are, and we know that those dinosaur killer-sized asteroids, we know where they are, and we know their trajectories do not come close to the planet.
So what other governments do we as the U.S. work with, or does the mission work with, so that we can, like, alert each other or talk to each other so that we can, like, kind of protect the whole planet?
I mean, there's actually a lot of initiatives. And so, you know, the U.S. is part of IWAN, the International Asteroid Warning Network. And so that's a group of folks that really try to coordinate a lot of different things. And NASA's Planetary Defense Coordination Office actually is part of that effort and part of many other efforts that we have on the coordination side as well. For the DART team, and especially for the Observations Working Group, it's been very interesting because we have an extremely international group of collaborators. In fact, we have taken observations on all seven continents since the time of impact. And it's been really, truly exciting to see so many people interested in this specific endeavor.
Why did you pick this target? Like, why did DART pick this target?
There's several reasons why we picked this specific target. And so one of them is that the Dimorphos system is what we call an eclipsing binary, which means that from the planet, the moon goes in front of and behind the larger one. So Dimorphos comes in front of Didymos and it goes behind Didymos. And when it does that, because of the geometry of how we are with respect to the sun, it's casting shadows or blocking out the light directly. And so we're going through eclipses and occultations. And that is something that we can actually observe from the ground. But, you know, Dimorphos is actually very important from a planetary defense perspective. It's in a key size range. Mm. It's a little bit larger, but we have a congressional mandate that we're supposed to discover as a community over 90% of the 140-meter diameter objects. And, you know, Dimorphos is about 160 meters.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's a very key size range. That's something that we should understand, because that is something that could cause regional devastation. This is not, you know, a complete catastrophe, but it's also something that we have only discovered 40% of the objects in that size range. And so we really need to do better.
So right now we are seeing about 40% of those asteroids that are, like you said, bigger than 100 meters. Mm-hmm. And then you want to kind of be able to get 90% of how many asteroids we pretty much know are out there. How do you close that gap then? How do you go from 40% to 90%?
I mean, there's a few ways that we're trying to do that. And part of that is being smart about how we survey and which telescopes we use to survey. You know, and so we are, you know, we have a lot of ground-based telescopes that is their job. They survey the sky for new asteroids with an emphasis on near-Earth asteroids. We also have a couple of things coming up in the near future. The Rubin Observatory, which is in Chile, should start observations in the coming years. And one of the things that they are doing as part of that is doing a cadence to discover more asteroids. And so we think that they're also going to find a lot of objects. The Planetary Defense Coordination Office at NASA is so interested in planetary defense overall strategy. We have a follow-up mission that comes out of that office, and that's called NEO Surveyor. But the idea is that this would be a space-based telescope using near-infrared wavelengths, which is really good because near-Earth objects are kind of warm. And we want to use that to discover even more objects.
So if this was a sci-fi movie, like in your mind, Christina, is the first DART mission like a climax of that sci-fi movie, or is it just the beginning?
I think that it's like the end of the first act, but I think we've really set the stage for a lot of other exciting things to come.
Thank you, Christina. That was amazing. Thank you for talking to us.
Truly a pleasure. I really like talking about DART. It's been a great time.
This episode was produced by Devin Schwartz, edited by Giselle Grayson, and fact-checked by Abby Levine. Gilly Moon was the audio engineer. Brendan Crump is our podcast coordinator, Beth Donovan is our senior director, and Anya Grundman is our senior vice president of programming. I'm Regina Barber. Thanks for listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater. Committed to helping companies, from nonprofits to the Fortune 500, find food for meetings and company events. With online ordering and 24/7 live support, learn more at easycater.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to The Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.